Last week, I took us through a number of different ways of bringing our practice more fully into our daily lives. I gave maybe 25 or 30 different ways of having our sense of awareness, of mindfulness, of compassion, of kindness, of wisdom, be more and more there in the flow of daily life. And almost everyone in the group indicated a commitment to work with the one or two or possibly three ways of connecting more one's practice with daily life and to work with that during the week. So how many of you remember this at least a good part of the week and worked with this, okay? And so I look forward to really hearing what people found, what you explored, what was useful. And I'm going to do two things today. I'm going to talk some about further ways of connecting our practice with our daily lives. Then I'm going to do an exercise about the last 15 minutes of my own presentation that will give you some further formal ways of connecting, especially meditation, with your own practice. And then we'll have some chance to discuss, and I look forward to really sharing from what you've been exploring. And I'm going to, even though I won't be here next week, I'm going to invite people, especially those who have been working on daily life practice in the last week, to see if you want to continue for the next week. And I spoke last time about how I've thought quite often of having a group that would focus on daily life practice, maybe for 4 months or 3 months or so. How many of you would be interested in that? Yeah, that would actually give some structure and some support, because those are huge factors in really having our daily life practice come alive. It's harder as simply a matter of individual willpower. It can be done. But the factors of a group, of coming to gatherings like this, of having even one or two people who are really doing something very similar to you, can really be those can be very huge in terms of that support. You know, I was thinking of a person that I share. I've been sharing since the March retreat, which for me was part of my inspiration for bringing up this topic, because at that retreat and in the weeks following, an interest in really continuing the energy of the retreat has been very strong. And there was a friend of mine who was on that retreat, and we have been speaking about every week or two since the retreat and giving support, and that makes a huge difference. So community, sense also a sense of structure, can be very large. Now, one of the key challenges, which I didn't mention so much last time, is that the way that Buddhist practice has come into the West has been largely through people learning meditation. And that's been very important. The danger is that a lot of other dimensions of practice are not seen as so important. It's very interesting that we actually have a lot of our centers are called meditation centers. That's interesting, right? That would typically not happen very much in Asia. You know, I was actually part of the group that helped founded the East Bay Meditation Center. Our initial name for it was the East Bay Dharma Center. But we thought that people wouldn't know what Dharma was, but they would know what meditation is. And so there, it'll come in a moment to some of the issues there, but there is this focus on this very valuable practice of meditation that can often obscure the fact that there are many, many dimensions of practice. There are many traditionally, and there are many, in fact, I think there are more in our time. And so traditionally, many of you know the core teaching about the different dimensions of practice was called the Noble Eightfold Path. Really listing eight different ways of practicing. Two of them connected with the cultivation of wisdom. These are all interrelated, but still they were named. And two of them are related to the cultivation of wisdom, usually translated as right or wise view, and right or wise intention. And then there were three connected with meditation, related to concentration, mindfulness, and effort, which especially means the effort to be aware, to be present. And then there were three that are more connected with the action dimension of everyday life, what we sometimes call the ethical dimension. This had to do with having a livelihood that was ethically appropriate, with having speech that was following guidelines. So speech was a whole factor for practice, and then one that more or less conveyed the need to be ethical in one's action. And in our practice, we tend to focus on the meditation aspect of it. And this, again, this is partly understandable, but it can be a problem. I work with people one-on-one, and I ask them, how's your practice this week? And they talk about meditation, and they don't necessarily talk about other things, right? And sometimes when people are having a hard time getting daily meditation, I say, well, there could be other aspects of practice that you do. There could be, maybe you do some reading. Maybe you really focus on kindness or compassion, or maybe you focus on acting ethically, skillful speech, and so forth. And often, when I say, how's your practice doing, people just focus on the meditation. And again, historically, this is somewhat understandable in that the meditative or contemplative dimensions of Western religions have been largely either lost or marginalized. They've been on the sidelines. You'd have to go a long way to try to find, if you were starting in 1960 or 1970, to try to find contemplative Judaism or Christianity or Islam, it would not be easy, right? You could have gone, as I did when I lived in Kentucky, I went to the Abbey of Gethsemane, which was the monastery where Thomas Merton was a monk. And there was the cultivation of Christian contemplation as it had been developed historically, starting a few hundred years after the time of Jesus, and then getting very highly developed in the monastic movements, and generally starting to be marginalized in the 14th century, 13th, 14th century, and being quite marginalized in the modern world. Be very unlikely to find anything about contemplation and meditation in the in a church, in the 20th century. And similarly, you wouldn't find much about contemplative or meditative practice in the Jewish tradition. I had one friend who told me he looked for 2 or 3 years to find Jewish meditative teaching. This was like in the 1980s, and he only succeeded when he got to Israel, and then only after a few months of looking. That's interesting, isn't it? Right. And so we have that way that we often focus on the meditation, but not always on the other things. And there can be a kind of a fetishism of meditation, which is sort of the occupational hazard of meditating. I wanted to read a story which brings this out. This is a story from the Western monk, Achan Sumedho. Some of you probably have met him. And he was practicing with his teacher, Achan Cha, who was a great Thai teacher, who died about 1991. And this is a story about Achan Sumedho when he was a young monk, and he really thought meditation was totally it. This is the story, okay? Achan Sumedho talked repeatedly about being enlightened rather than becoming enlightened. Be awake now. Be enlightened in the present moment. That is not about doing something now to become enlightened in the future. That kind of thinking is bound up with self and time and bears no fruit. Achan Sumedho himself was not always so clear about this point. He would often tell the story about his own obsessions with being a meditator, quote-unquote meditator. Achan Cha's method of teaching emphasized formal meditation practice to quite a great extent, but he was also extremely keen on not making the formal meditation distinct from the rest of life. That's our occupational hazard as Westerners, right? And so forth. Not making it distinct from the rest of life. He spoke about maintaining a continuity of practice, whether one was walking, standing, sitting, or lying down. The same was true for eating, using the bathroom, and walking. The point was always to sustain a continuity of awareness. He used to say, if your peace rests on the meditation mat, when you leave the mat, you leave your peace. Once Achan Cha was given a piece of forested land on a hillside. The very generous supporter who had donated it said to him, if you can find a way to make a road up to the top of the mountain, I will build a monastery there for you. Already always up to a challenge of the nature, Achan Cha spent a week or two in the mountain and found a pathway up. He then moved the entire monastic community out there to take the road. Achan Sumedho, and Achan, by the way, just means teacher. That's what the word means. Was a recently arrived monk. He had been there a year or two by this time and was a very serious meditator. He hadn't been keen to leave the settled life at the main monastery. But he joined in, and there he was, breaking rocks in the sun, pushing wheelbarrows of rubble around, and working hard with the rest of the community. After two or three days, he was getting hot, sweaty, and cranky. At the end of the day, after a 12-hour shift, everyone would sit down to meditate and would be reeling. Achan Sumedho thought, this is useless. I'm wasting my time. My meditation has fallen apart completely. This is not helping the spiritual life at all. He carefully explained his concerns to Achan Cha. I'm finding that all the work we are doing is harmful to my meditation. I really think it would be much better for me if I didn't take part in it. I need to do more sitting and walking meditation, more formal practice. That would be very helpful to me, and it's what I think would be for the best. So you kind of know what's coming, right? Okay. Achan said, okay, Sumedho, yes, you can do that, but I'd better inform the Sangha so that everyone knows what's happening. He could be really wicked in this way. This is, by the way, from the book Small Boat, Great Mountain by Achan Amaro. You can get this online. Wonderful book. At the community meeting, he said, I want to make an announcement to everyone. Now I know we have come up here to make this road, and I know that we're all working hard at breaking rocks and carrying gravel. I know this is important work for us to do, but the work of meditation is also very important. Sumedho has asked me if he can practice meditation while we build the road. And I've told him that it is absolutely all right. I do not want any of you to think any critical thoughts of him. It's absolutely all right with me. He can stay alone and meditate, and we will continue building the road. Achan Cha was out there from dawn until dusk. When he wasn't working on the road, he was receiving guests and teaching. So he was really cranking it out. In the meantime, Achan Sumedho stayed alone and meditated. He felt pretty bad on the first day, and even worse on the second. By the third day, he couldn't stand it any longer. He felt tortured and finally left his solitude. He rejoined the monks, broke rocks, carried gravel, and really gave himself to the work. Achan Cha looked at the enthusiastic young monk with a foot-wide grin and said, "You're enjoying the work, Sumedho." "Yes, I am. Isn't it strange that your mind is happier now in the heat and the dust than it was when you were meditating alone?" "Yes, it is." So that's a kind of dramatic story to make the point, right, that he had that kind of misunderstanding, and we can have that. And so it's really helpful to have a number of different ways. And this is what we looked at last time. We looked at a host of different ways to deepen one's practice. Now, some of the ones I mentioned were about deepening one's practice by giving an emphasis to the formal practice. We could actually give a little more intensification of our practice. We could do a little more formal practice, a little longer, a second session. I mentioned quite a few ways to do that. We could bring a teaching in more detail in our meditation, which can often spark a lot of interest. We could really work with impermanence, or, you know, a very important one that one can work with both in formal practice and really bring into the daily life is watching any moment when the mind gets reactive. That is a huge, that is a huge practice. And one can work with it. You get, first get a little bit of stability, then you look really careful for any time when the mind is either grasping onto something, I like it, I want this, I want more of this, here's what I'm going to do, or you're pushing away something. I don't like that thought, I don't like this body sensation, I don't like this emotion. That if we can actually track that in the formal meditation and then take an intention, a strong intention, to look for that during the course of the day, and actually study when we get reactive, that can bring tremendous learning. Or maybe if there's one particular interaction that you have, it could be maybe I have this difficult person at work. Let me study that. You know, it has to be workable. Can't be too much. Right? Can't be too strong. It has to be the sort of challenge that you can want, not something where you totally lose it regularly. You know, or not some really difficult relationship, but look for something that's moderately difficult. And working with that teaching of looking for reactivity, watching your mind studying it, can bring tremendous fruit. And when you have that intention, it can also be really, really interesting. I've told, you know, a lot of my own experiences doing that. I've told the story a few times, I think, of being with a boss with whom I had reactivity, when he, I thought, didn't listen to me. When I would say something, he would change the subject right away. And that led me to be quite reactive, be judgmental, and so forth. So that's a wonderful way to connect the formal practice with our practice off the cushion. It's also really helpful to have a sense of the different dimensions of practice that I mentioned traditionally. And then I think it's also helpful to know that in the contemporary world, I think our sense of practice can also get broadened. We have the traditional Eightfold Path, but I also think we have a number of other ways of bringing a sense of practice into our lives. One of them is bringing in the different dimensions that particularly Western psychology can help us with, that there are aspects of our life and our practice where we may have some regular psychological issues. These are not named traditionally, but I think the kind of the contemporary map of practice has to be quite big. And so we want to look at the psychological issues, and we may want to do some work on them with a psychologist or just on our own. Maybe look at certain issues. Maybe look at how I, whatever, get reactive with this person. Or one area that we could talk about is sort of the shadow area. You know, areas where I tend to maybe criticize others, or maybe it's my anger, or maybe it's this issue or whatever, or maybe it's developing further with my emotions. There's a very interesting way of framing this that comes from Ken Wilber and some of his colleagues. Some of you know this. He talks about there being actually, I think, four processes. He often says three, but some people have added a fourth. Four processes that really collectively define our practice in this large and more contemporary sense. One of them is waking up. And that's the traditional model of coming to awareness and awakening. But a second he calls growing up, which is particularly looking at the a developmental map, a developmental sequence, and seeing where we are and going further in our own development. Again, it can mean many things. It can mean developing more morally. It can mean seeing some task that we only really accomplish through our work or through relationships and so forth. So there's growing up. And there's also cleaning up. Cleaning up is related to our psychological stuff and working particularly with our shadow. And that's, so there's all these could define whole areas that we look at for periods of time. And then the fourth one is called showing up. Always an upward movement. And the showing up could be framed in terms, I think it's connected with an area that I talk about at times. It's connected with the bringing of our practice to make our contribution to the world. Maybe through one's work, maybe through activism, maybe through being involved in the community, and so forth. And there's a way that one can really focus and connect one's practice with that. I know the people, for example, who are organizing this Buddhist group for the climate march, there's a lot of thought about how to really connect practice with being in that public setting. How do you do that? And there's an attempt really to work with it. It's a large topic. It's actually something, it's a theme that I went into quite a bit in the book about how do you work with attachment to views or thinking you're right or being overly self-righteous or demonizing the opponent, all these things, right? These are all areas where we could practice. So these are all very important. And so I mentioned a lot of other ways. I'm kind of adding a few others. And if I was doing that 4-month group, I probably would focus on some of the most fundamental ones. Here, I think it's very important that people just find one or two ways of connecting your formal practice to your daily practice or deepening your practice in general. Again, for people who haven't had a daily sitting, daily formal practice, that could be the one edge of learning. What I'm suggesting is we all want that one edge of learning, and we have to see intuitively what really calls for you that you'd really like to work with. Okay? Now I'm going to bring in a formal practice right now that's going to involve some exercises. Okay? So I mentioned about 30 ways last time. I mentioned a few others this time. People have done some work. And I'm going to do an exercise now. And this is a modification of some practices which I've learned from the Tibetan tradition. And I'm modifying them to fit. And these are actually formal practices that are called mixing practices. Essentially, one mixes, in this case, we'll mix mindfulness or loving kindness with a particular activity. The basic idea, and as far as I know, it's kind of commonsensical that you kind of stabilize in mindfulness and then you train and do an activity for a little while until you lose it. And then you come back. The basic idea is that you stabilize with some degree of mindfulness in this case, and then you do an activity. We're going to do just two simple activities. One of them is going to be walking around, and the other one is going to be talking. Okay? In the traditional, the traditional Tibetan teaching is a little more complicated. One would train in body, speech, and mind, and you'd also train in pure body, pure expressions of body, speech, and mind, neutral expressions, and impure expressions. So when we actually did the training, we would train in impure ways of manifesting our body. An example would be hitting someone. And you know, when we did the talking, we were also, one of the ways we practiced was to learn about impure speech. And so, like, we would do, trash talking. But keeping in mind, the idea is, you know, it's humorous to some extent, but the idea is basically that you learn to have awareness even when you lose it. That's interesting, isn't it? That's interesting. Anyway, these are, I'm not going to do it that way. But the basic, I think taking us through this, my hope is that we actually have the lived sense that the essence is the going back and forth. Stabilize, like you could practice with this. You're going to have a meeting. You do 3 or 4 minutes of meditation right before the meeting. Then you go into the meeting. Okay? You're going to take a hike. You do a little bit of meditation and you get some stability. And then you bring it into the activity. The other aspect of it is to start to have a personal hierarchy of knowing which activities are harder and which are easier. And you work with the easier ones and you sort of build up to the harder ones. Like I do this, the hardest for me, probably for many of us, is the computer. Right? Mindfulness, we have zero instructions from the Buddha on mindfulness at the computer. No direct instructions, maybe indirect. And so computer is the hardest for me, so I would develop my capacities in other ways, but then when I felt strong enough, I would bring the awareness to the computer. And that's interesting, but the model is you stabilize and then you go to the activity. If you're doing a training period, you can go back and forth. You could do like 3, 5 minutes meditating, 5 minutes on the computer, 5 minutes back, or something like that, with any activity. And then you get a sense of what's my hierarchy from easiest to hardest. And you try to work with what's easiest before you go to the hardest. Okay? So it's interesting, isn't it? It's a whole system for doing this, if you want to do it. So we're going to do this. So we'll first meditate for 3 minutes. 3 minutes starts now. Okay. Now you can do either mindfulness, or if metta, loving kindness, is your main practice, that's fine also. Now bring your awareness to your body as you continue to sit. And when you're ready, keeping the mindfulness of the body, just get up and walk for about 2 minutes. Keeping your awareness in your body at your own pace. And if you feel like it's better to just stay seated, that's fine too. But the invitation is to just walk, keeping your awareness of your body as you walk. So this will be done in silence. You can walk at any pace. And make your way back when you're ready to your starting point, to your seat or cushion. And back to mindfulness. We'll go back to the formal practice for about another 2 or 3 minutes. Just keep coming back to either the mindfulness or the metta practice. Now in a moment, we'll go to be with one other person, and we'll do a little bit of speaking, bringing as much mindfulness or loving kindness as we can. And the content will be very simple. I'd like you to just think of something that you could talk about in about a minute that happened in the last few days or the last week that is on a scale of meaning from 1 to 10, 10 being very meaningful, that would be maybe 4 or 5. You know, not hugely meaningful, but kind of in the middle. Could be yesterday I went shopping and got a lot of vegetables. For some of us, that would be deeply meaningful. For me, it's kind of in the middle. Okay, so just think about what that would be. It's very brief. Okay, and then come back to just being present. Okay, and then just turn to the person next to you, or close enough. Okay, we'll make sure that everyone has someone. Raise your hand if you're, let's see, looks like we have anyone. Okay, so you could do it with me. Okay, so you can bring your, why don't you bring your chair up here. Okay. So first we just want to have, first of all, come back to mindfulness. Establish the mindfulness, and then the first person will just talk for 1 minute and try to keep your mindfulness as you're speaking and as you're listening. One way to do that is have mindfulness of the body. Just might, could be just mindfulness of the hands or the hands on the knees. Okay, so first stabilize in mindfulness. And the way that you're going to work with in the speaking, maybe the hands, feeling the hands, feeling the body. And first person will go just for a minute. Let the first person finish up. Just finish the sentence you're on. And then come back to silence. We'll come back to silence now. And just come back to stabilizing in mindfulness or loving kindness for 30 seconds or a minute. And keep that awareness in the way that you're going to keep it during the talking. Again, it could be having awareness of the hands, the whole body, whatever that is. And we'll have the second person just talk for about a minute. So finish up, finish your sentence, and then again we'll come back to just, you can kind of rearrange your chair so you're facing towards the front, or as you were. And come back to the mindfulness some, or the loving kindness, just to come back to stabilize. In a moment, I'll ring the bell and we'll have some discussion. And if you choose, try to keep your awareness occurring during the discussion as well in the way that you were doing. That's up to you. Oh, okay, no sound. How many of you would that help to repeat what I just said? Okay, so you heard. Yeah, I think the sound was off. I'm turning it on and off. So stabilize in awareness or loving kindness. Then I'll invite any reflections on the exercise, any questions, any comments from the talk, the theme, any sharing of what you found in your own last week. So that's, I'm particularly interested in that. You know, what was an insight, what was challenging, any questions. I think we use the mic, so we will need one helper to help with bring the mic around.
That mixed with this very nicely because it was a body thing and with the conceptual things. But mostly I found in practicing it that I was very grateful for that phrase that is repeated over and over. And when you find that your mind has drifted, just bring it back.
Yeah.
Because I tend to get very critical of myself.
Yeah.
And somehow it just was okay.
To bring it back. And this whole practice is not easy to bring this into daily life. You know, I mean, I didn't mention this time. I think last time I mentioned just some of the challenges of, you know, need I mention them, right? The busyness, the electronic media obviously have their benefits, but we get very hooked. And it's very hard to have awareness when the mind is just right into some of those mechanisms. That's hard, right? So the conditions are hard. We don't have as much support. And so that's why I think community is important, having a buddy or two like that. But one can also do significant things on one's own. Having, you know, some structure, do an experiment like that for a day. Do something like what we did just now, that was short, it was a little less than 15 minutes, but doing that in a day, or 3 hours, you know, take 3 hours once a week, do a kind of Sabbath practice, and do something like what we did, just did some formal practice, and then say, now I'll clean my kitchen, right? And do that with awareness, right? And maybe go back and forth, have the mindfulness, do it until you kind of feel like you're losing your awareness, and then come back. So that's the essence of the practice, it's the back and forth, right? If you feel like you're losing it, this helps especially if you're not in a rush. So it's nice to have maybe a time, maybe 3 or 4 hours, which you've just dedicated to deepening your practice once a week, like a kind of Sabbath practice. So there's no rush, you know. You can... The rushing and sense of time can make awareness a lot harder. So can work with this in that way. And then the key is when you notice yourself a little bit off, Just like you say, moment to moment, we just say, when you notice your mind away, come back. And for bringing it into activities, which can be a little more challenging because they're complex or more complex, then you could either just bring it back in the moment, and if that's good enough, then continue. And if it requires you maybe stabilizing for a few minutes, then maybe you do that. So this is a very nice model for doing something like 3 or 4 hours, and it can be really exciting. It's a different way of practice. You know, we could, I don't know, we could do something like this. We could do a half day or a day long at someone's house. Maybe they have some tasks. You know, we could have rotation. They have some tasks. Clean the refrigerator. Clean the refrigerator. You know, cut the grass, whatever. I guess we don't have grass anymore, right? But you know, clean the refrigerator, or, you know, clean out the attic, or whatever it is. We could do it as a mindfulness practice, a little bit like Tom Sawyer, right? But it's a great model. You know, this is a model that is actually going to be necessary for bringing this into our, something like this, right? Back and forth is really the key. And not being in a rush, having, you know, when you're doing a training period, eventually, you know, we can get pretty good at this. You know, others, especially sharing maybe something from the last week if you experimented.
Well, my practice this week was when I thought ill thoughts of someone.
Yeah.
I had to think, well, what is that person capable of that's good?
Yeah.
And what are their talents and what are their abilities?
Yeah, yeah.
And it really worked very nicely.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, there's a lot that we can do if we track for difficult thoughts towards another or towards ourselves, you know? And if we really have a very strong intention for that, so that we kind of have our radar set up for that, we have to do that. We have to remember. You probably remember it each day. This is what I'm going to look for, right? That's crucial. If you just do it once for the whole week, it'll probably forget it. But you have to remember it. Sometimes remembering could be you have set the intention in the morning and the afternoon or something like this. And then you notice, and then you were bringing like a counter. So it's a very, very wise and skillful and could be, I imagine, a lot of learning, right? Yeah, I mean, hopefully we've all looked at some of this stuff before, but this can bring some focus to it. I mean, you could do, you know, I mentioned some of the similar practices, which is doing forgiveness practice on the while driving. Both towards others and towards myself, if necessary. Right? Or you know, forgiveness practice with telemarketers. Yeah, or really just tracking. You know, here, you know, you were really, in a way, it's a kind of empathy practice. You were really, you know, because when we get negative towards people, we tend to just see the negative and not see the totality of the person, right? And so you're reminding yourself, so it's kind of coming from wisdom. It's a very simple practice and can really take you, probably took you out of that sense of polarization pretty quickly. And see, then you try it with the degrees of difficulty that are on a scale of 10, or maybe the 2s, 3s, 4s, 5s, 6s. And of course you can try it for the 9s or 10s, but you can especially work with it in the middle range, and then you develop the capacity, you can bring it to the harder ones. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, please.
So we weren't here last week.
A little closer. Sorry.
We were not here last week, but I had an experience during another meditative practice ago that has been along the lines that you're describing, and tonight's practice really helped reinforce it.
heard your mouth.
I'm sorry. A bright line as though across the horizon. And all of the thoughts or actions or memories just sort of played above it.
Yeah.
And feelings sort of played below it. And it was, I tried to identify what it was, and it seemed to Justin with the awareness of staying aware of whatever it was
yeah.
happening. And so it seems simple to
yeah.
just have that happen. It's extraordinarily humbling. It was really difficult since then, and even tonight with the instruction, even now while I'm talking,
yeah.
to keep that level of trying to be aware of the fact that I'm describing it,
yeah.
or that whatever it is that's going on at the moment, it feels like a really important way in.
Yeah. Well, it sounds great, you know, and so it's really all we want to do for all of this is find our next step. You don't have to work it all out how you're going to get that all the time. We just want to find what appeals to me right now as the way I can take this whole area a little bit further, you know. And what you're describing sounds very, very rich, you know, and the experience is also, it's something you'll remember. It's really pointing to a possibility. You know, what occurred as you were speaking was that one thing that's hard, and a lot of this is cultural, is that we tend to be so mental. Not everyone, but a lot of us in this culture, it's so mental. So if I was doing that 4-month training on daily life practice, I probably would have a month on grounding further in the body. You know, and so anyone who wants to develop this, who just does any form of grounding in the body, it's going to be helpful for this. That could mean just focusing on walking meditation whenever you're walking. That was one of my early practices. I was a student, and I didn't have a car. I was living in Boston. I had the brilliant insight. I walked a lot. Let me have all my walking just be walking meditation, kind of grounding me a little further in the body. And later, I worked more explicitly on awareness of the body. But we could do this in yoga, in walking, in exercising, could do it in eating. And anything that supports awareness of the body is going to be an aid here, because what happens is that we just get caught in so often in this culture, especially, it's not this way in all cultures, for better or worse, we get caught in that mental immersion, you know? It's one of the challenges with big challenges with computers. It's like this mental immersion. I've looked at that a lot in the time since the retreat. Like, oh, kind of feel like I'm getting sucked into the mechanism. So anything that stays with our body, that the awareness of the body is strong enough, we're not totally dominated by the mind. That's really key. I think we have time at most for one short one. If anyone has anything. Okay, if you can be on the brief side, that would be helpful.
So I have a video, which is movements and breathing
yeah.
exercises. It's not particularly Qigong,
yeah.
but it has elements of that.
Yeah.
So it has specific movements and breathing instructions.
Yeah.
So I decided rather than just doing what the video said, I would try to add mindfulness
oh, yeah.
to the movements and to the breathing.
Yeah.
Because it was a structured kind of thing that I
yeah.
did 3 or 4 times a week. So I just added, I should be mindful of
yeah.
all these things. It'll last for about 50 minutes and I go in and out.
That's great. Yeah, yeah, having, you know, that can be a great support to have something like a recording. A DVD or just an audio recording of something like that, and then you bring your mindfulness to it, can be really, really helpful. Like, so if you have a guided yoga practice or something, you know, one of the major shifts, I think, in the last 5 or 10 years is that the whole world of yoga has really been connected more and more with mindfulness. You know, we've had programs at Spirit Rock, like 1- and 2-year programs for yoga teachers. Maybe some of you have done this. You know. And it's really a change. That's great.
Yeah.